Caroline, Willie, D. May, it's 102.5, 106.3, the game in the game at Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Outkick 360's Jonathan Hutton joins us now. Hutton, I want to get into all of the Titans' transactions, cutting Robert Woods, cutting Taylor Lewan, but before we do that, before we got to you, we were talking about the Brandon Miller situation in Alabama and how many layers this whole situation truly has of Brandon Miller's involvement, Brandon Miller's lapse in judgment in being involved with this, and then Nate Oates' response of, you know, wrong place, wrong time, just a totally distasteful way to address it. And then add on top of it, the fact that he admitted to knowing about it and that the university knew about it. There's just so many layers to this story that look really, really bad for the University of Alabama. Your take on it?
Yeah, then they get the contract extension. Optically, that looks awful after the comments yesterday. We had Terrell Robinson on, who was in the courtroom yesterday for the preliminary hearing. And a couple of things stood out about what she said and what was or was not testified to. But basically, the situation was he was driving the car, dropped off the guys, Darius Miles, and I believe the other guy's last name is Davis, and dropped off his friends and teammates at the bar, at the club, wherever this took place, on the strip in Tuscaloosa. And the line was too long, so he did not stay. And then got a text message to bring the gun to Darius Miles. It was Miles' gun. And what was not said by law enforcement is whether or not the gun was already in the car that he was driving or not. We don't know that. But nonetheless, whatever he said back on January 15th, 16th, whenever they actually spoke to him, law enforcement was okay with it. Alabama's been okay with it. And I think the other thing that really stood out to me, this was news to us yesterday. This was not news to Alabama. Alabama has known about this detail since January 15th. And they've gone on this tear where at a point they're the number one team in the country, the leading scorer in the SEC for the best team. And you look around going, man, they've sat on this for over a month. And Nate Oates still reacted that way. And had that comment. That is even dumber than just in the moment finding out and being asked by the media about it. It was awful yesterday in how they handled it overall.
Yeah, I think that's another part of it is Alabama's knowing of the situation and how will there be backlash of Alabama knowing about the situation and doing virtually nothing about it.
Tell me if you agree with this. Right now, the situation Alabama finds themselves in, which they put themselves in, as much as you may love this kid, Brandon Miller, as much as he has been an asset for you on the court, as a head coach, as an AD, as a president, you got to remove him from the bench. You cannot no longer allow him, regardless if. If he didn't pull a trigger, he brought back the gun. You got to remove him from the court, and then furthermore, you got to remove the head coach from the sideline. You can't allow him to continue to coach if you're Alabama. If you do not do those things, it's a middle finger to the victim and the victim's family.
Well, but they're not going to, Mace, because today they announced a 4-year extension. That is $4 million annually on average, according to Rothstein. I mean, that's that again, they haven't done anything since January 15th in regards to this particular part of the story. And what I don't know about Brandon Miller's side of this, they clearly do. I'm willing to at least hear them out on it, but that's my overall point is they have to explain what Miller knew or didn't know about what was going down. And it should he have brought a loaded weapon back to the scene? Absolutely not. But not Bama, law enforcement, all of it, the chief deputy district attorney even said that there was nothing that they could charge him with based on how everything was explained and who copped to what and who said they did this or that. Davis admitted it was Miles that admitted giving Davis the gun or telling him where it was and saying there was one in the chamber. but it was Miller that drove the car back where the gun was either dropped off, delivered, whatever it would have been. I simply don't know that detail. That wasn't explained yesterday. But they've got to give better details than that, given this, because right now it looks awful on Alabama's end, knowing that I think people assume that they found out yesterday. They've known since the beginning. Nate Oates said that. This is nothing new. And then a day after all this, the university hands him a fat check, a raise. They announce it. So I don't view it as they're now going to do something when they haven't done anything for the last 6 weeks. That tells me I don't intend them to do anything right now.
Yeah, and it may end up that way, Hutt, but it's just, I mean, regardless if he had anything physically to do with the shooting, meaning Brandon Miller, the text was sent.
Yes.
He came back to the establishment with the gun. The gun didn't just, you know, show up on its own.
He was there. He was on the scene when it went down. His windshield of the car was hit twice by gunfire. And what's unclear, we don't know if it's return fire or if it is from the gun that was in the car originally with him that he brought back. But it was Davis that pulled the trigger, and it was Darius Miles, that told Davis where the gun was. So that's all been said by law enforcement in this preliminary hearing. And all this was yesterday was a hearing to determine whether or not it's going before a grand jury, which it is, and bond was denied. So this is where we are. But the one detail that law enforcement put in is how the gun was there, and it came through Miller.
And as Nate Oates said, he knew about that. So this brings up the question, even though legally – it doesn't look like there's going to be any charges, at least as we sit here right now, but it brings up the question, what is your expectation level for the conduct of your players, your students, et cetera? We can think of a lot of examples of a player being held to a higher standard than just did he get charged with a crime or not. I brought up off the air to these guys, Hutt, remember the awful rape case? Nobody wants to remember that. Yeah. It's a bad memory. It's an awful thing that happened on the Vanderbilt campus. But one thing that happened, for example, was I don't think he was the only one, but Chris Boyd was a very, very good wide receiver that was not charged with a crime. He was basically thrown off of the team for just not, quote, doing the right thing when he became aware of what had happened. Right, he had knowledge of what happened. He handled it one way. They didn't like how he handled it. He was thrown off the team. Right, never played again after that.
You don't
have to be charged, for example, to be held responsible and be held to a higher standard. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I'm not saying I wouldn't do anything to him. I'm saying I'm looking at it from the purview of they haven't done anything yet. And that tells me, like, it's a middle finger saying, no, we're not going to do it. And, you know, going back to what you mentioned about Vandy, just to give an example of the opposite end of it, there was someone in the room, the roommate was in the room. He had to testify, so he had to give details of how he knew what was going on but pretended to be asleep. But because of his testimony, he didn't get anything. He wasn't a part of the team. And I think that's the overall point, is that the teammates that were involved, it was conduct detrimental to whatever. We hear about that in the league. You don't have to be charged with anything to be suspended in the NFL. There are repercussions and discipline that come with poor decisions. Doesn't mean he has to be kicked off the team completely, but to say that he was wrong place, wrong time, and all these guys, it's college, they go out, I can't keep up with everybody after practice, that's just stupid. And it makes Nate Oates look like, you know, he's more concerned about winning than setting an example and a higher standard for players that make poor decisions that lead to not just in, you know, what could be a poor night of decision making, but this is a capital murder charge on one of his players in Darius Miles and another guy last name Davis, and there were two other players there. It was Miller and another player that, you know, averages, I think, about 14 minutes a game maybe for Bama, and both have played and have continued to play.
Coming up next, Jonathan Hutton will stick around when I get his thoughts on the Titans' moves of the day. Before we get into that, Hutton, tell us about Blend Bar.
Yeah, Blend Bar with David Off Cigar is one of my favorite stops in Nashville, 508 Church Street, downtown. Voted the best old-fashioned in Nashville, receiving that nod over 14 other bars and restaurants in Music City. Blend Bar, they have an exclusive relationship with David Off Cigars, and that's the best cigar in the world. That allows rare cigars, and they have that access. Only Blend Bar can carry those. Blend Bar with David Off Cigars, the best ventilation system in the industry that allows for enjoyment for the smokers and non-smokers alike. So you can go grab a drink. You don't have to smoke the cigar while you're there. You can grab the best old-fashioned in town, and your suit's not going to smell like cigars. That means your significant other is not going to complain either. That's important. So check us out. I'll see you at Blend Bar with David Off Cigars. Great for pre-gaming prior to Preds games. Great spot to watch the Preds games during the week whenever they're on the road, and it's a solid spot before an event. Our studio at 6th and Peabody, for instance. It's a quick walk there. On social media, at Blend Bar Nashville, at Blend Bar Nashville on Instagram, or just swing by in person, 508 Church Street, two blocks from Bridgestone Arena and the Ryman. Blend Bar, luxury redefined.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Outkick 360's Jonathan Hutton with us now. Willie?
Okay, so Hutt, a couple of moves by the Titans here, neither of which are a big surprise. But, you know, Taylor Lewan goes back a long way with this franchise. So this is still significant news. So in your mind, I don't know if this has been determined, but do you think there is no way he's coming back to the Titans under any circumstances, or is that still to be determined?
It's a really good question, because what's the number that Taylor is willing to play for versus what they have in mind for Taylor's role? Because I think the move today was inevitable, and you're right, it is significant. I mean, he's a former first-round pick that they gave significant money to, which is rare for this franchise as well, to bring back a guy on a big deal like they did. Normally those guys walk, so, or they're not on the roster for a second contract. But point being, I think that there could be a role for Lewan, but I think the Titans issue and many teams around the league, what's the number Taylor's willing to play for versus what he's doing now, which, I mean, he's not injured, you know, he's not getting hurt. His body feels probably really good right now. But he's had two ACLs, right, in 3 years. And if you're bringing him back on any number, to me, you have to have a plan where he's not going to be available, because that's the trend of Taylor Lewan and why he's released today. So, look, I think they make the move, and then I think the idea would be, what do they do during free agency in the draft to then set up what would be, okay, here's the contract that we are willing to give Lewan if he's interested. And there's been no indication one way or the other on that. And, Willie, you and I spoke on the show a couple weeks ago. I think he's off to do media. That's just the vibe, right? But
yep.
At the same time, if he's going to play, I think it's here or it's nowhere. And it's because of the medicals, and the Titans know that better than anyone.
And I did take note, it was, I guess, a couple of months ago when he did the interview and said, look, I know that if I'm going to play again, I've got to be all in. And so I have to decide, am I committed to trying to win a job? And especially if I'm not guaranteed to be a starting player, if I'm not going to be making the same money that I'm used to be making. And it does seem like he's having a great time. And we knew he would be a natural for some of these broadcast things. So if that is speaking to him right now, you do wonder, can he gear himself back up to that level to be able to say, I got to work harder than I've ever worked to get back to the level that I need to be to continue to play.
Yeah, and for a team that, you know, right now doesn't have the same outlook that it did 2 or 3 years ago, right? Like, there's just a different vibe with it right now with the guys they're going to have to drop in order to make room under the cap to go and improve this roster, which has a lot of holes. But one of them was at left tackle prior to any general manager being fired or anything, because Lewan was injured and had the knee issue that was going to be a problem moving forward, regardless of the situation they're in with the cap or win-loss. So I think there is a crack in the door for him to return, but there are a lot of varying factors that go into that, where a month from now, a month and a half from now, post-draft, there may not be that crack in the door based on what this team does or based on the commitment level of LeJuan between now and then.
Now, they also released Robert Woods, and that's of no surprise, I think, to anyone, considering, you know, his production this past season and him not fully, I think, not fully over the knee injury. Do you expect any more big names to be released within the next week?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they're happening today. You know, I think Bud Dupree is an obvious guy to watch out for. Mace, we've talked about that with production versus availability and money. They can save money on the cap there. I believe by these two moves, they're somewhere around $2 million under the cap currently, which is good. They're cap compliant, so they don't have to make another move by the start of the league year if they don't want to, but they will. It seems like they're going ahead and doing that. Zach Cunningham is one to be on the lookout for as well. And Jamarco Jones, who didn't play a snap last year, got injured during camp on what was a free agent signing out of Seattle. He could be a someone that they could, you know, release and then actually bring back. I don't know the status of his health issue. I think it was a bicep issue. It may have been a pec. But nonetheless, that's where they can save some salary cap concerns and really start to gear up for what's going to be busy in free agency. They've not just the draft this year. I mean, they've got to get under the cap and then actually be aggressive. They've got many holes on the offensive line. We know wide receiver. And then beyond that, there's little pieces that end up being a lot of the sum of the parts that need to be much better to raise the bar from where they were a year ago.
Jonathan Hutton is with us, Outkick 360. Hutton, the rumor mill is rumor milling, and there was a report out of New York that they would be, quote, more interested than people would think in Ryan Tannehill. Do you think that it's a realistic possibility that the Titans could move on from Ryan Tannehill? And if so, who's quarterbacking the Titans?
Yeah, I mean, anything's on the table, Caroline. And I the only thing I'm certain of is they are exploring so many different areas of this roster and what they're going to do, except for Jeffrey Simmons. I mean, I think it's a foregone conclusion. They value him long-term, and it's time to pay him. Beyond that, who knows with the collaboration that's going on inside the building. You know, it's not – I don't look at the Jets as a possibility for Tannehill based on whatever they feel like they would – what are they going to trade? And from the Titans' perspective – what are you going to get in return other than, I don't know what the pick would be, but the issue I would have with that is why would you trade for Tannehill if you can sign Derek Carr or trade for Aaron Rodgers? And, you know, the Titans need to make up their mind on the quarterback thing before maybe that decision has even come to fruition. And look, it's not hard to link this up. Todd Downing goes there as the passing game coordinator, and all of a sudden the Titans have more interest the Jets have more interest than what would have been considered whenever the speculation was going about the veteran quarterback that they're going to get. I think there's a scenario where Tannehill's not the quarterback. I just don't lean that direction because I don't think the percentages are higher than where I think he's returning to this roster under a restructured contract.
Now, quickly, before we get you out of here, Hutt, the most important free agent for the Tennessee Titans on this team. I know many may think, well, it's David Long Jr. But as I continue to look at it, because of the unknown with Jeffrey Simmons, I think you're going to sign him back, but we thought that of A.J. Brown, and it didn't happen. I think it's very imperative for them to get T.R. Tart under contract and under contract very quickly because, to me, he was one of the most improved guys on that defensive line. Matter of fact, that team.
Consistent, yeah. I mean, he played his role well, and Vrabel mentioned him at the end of the season by saying, "Now there are guys that need to understand that what they've done, while good, he's got to continue to raise his game and take it to the next level and commit this off season more than he ever has, coming off of what was a very nice season and a career season for him in terms of production and playing time." And I'm with you. I mean, I think there's a rotational piece for him in there, especially given the numbers that they're going to potentially lose that are currently on the roster on the defensive front, he's been one of the guys they can actually trust and count on week in and week out. There's value there. The question is, how much value? And do you assess where you are before you bring him back, or do you trust him enough to where he's one of the integral parts of the here and now, but also, you know, the 2-3-4 year outlook for what Rand Carthon is trying to build? There's definitely a role for him in Vrabel's defense and Shane Bowen's defense. And I think alongside Simmons, you're onto something there. David Long Jr., yes. Beyond that, it's hard to point to one specific free agent and say he's got to be back. And I guess that's the issue with the roster, right? There are pieces that you feel like can be replaced. And there are guys on the roster that are making a lot of money that can be replaced by cheaper and potentially younger talent in the draft. We're going to see a lot of movement. Today's just the start of that. And priorities will be listed. Tart's probably higher on the list than what the average fan thinks.
Jonathan Hutt, Outkick 360. Hutt, we appreciate you.
Thank you so much, guys. Always enjoy this. Have a great day.
All right, thanks, Hutt, and you too. We'll chat with you next week. Jonathan Hutt, Outkick 360, joining us on a Wednesday at noon, as he does every week. We've got a bunch of your thoughts on the Brandon Miller situation. I know we have thoughts as well. D-Mace and I, so we'll get into those coming up next. It's Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.